The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Thank you all for joining us today for our webinar on electric vehicle integration in areas of extreme heat. I am Dr. Alison Fridmar, and I'm from the Energy Efficiency Division of the International Energy Agency. And I'm joined by my colleague, Vida Rosita. We will be moderating the webinar today. I want to start by saying I hope that you, your families and friends are well and remain so. We are in an unprecedented situation. Reflecting this, the International Energy Agency is hard at work on developing analysis and policy recommendations to support governments, especially on how economic stimulus can be strategically used to support clean energy transitions. Electric vehicles are and will continue to play an important role in this transition. We are pleased to have an opportunity for the Qatar Environment and Energy Research Institute to present on their interesting and important work in this area. And we have some great speakers lined up today. Dr. Marcello Contestabile is a principal economist at Curie, where he leads techno-economic and policy research. Over the last 15 years, he has conducted extensive techno-economic and policy analysis on low-emission road transport technology, particularly battery electric and hydrogen fuel cell vehicles and related infrastructure. He holds a master's and a PhD from Imperial College London. Dr. Sertash Bayan is a senior scientist where he leads EV integration and demand side management projects. He's held various academic positions in prestigious universities, and because of this visibility, he's been elected as chair of the Industrial Electronics Society Power Electronics Technical Committee. He holds a PhD in electrical engineering. Dr. Pierre Kubiak is a senior scientist at Curie, where he's leading the battery reliability project within the Energy Management Group. He's a chemist and he's specialised in the field of lithium-ion batteries. He has held positions in several research institutes in Europe and he has a PhD in chemistry. His current focus is on battery integration projects, which include battery management. As you can tell, we're going to have a very interesting expert session today. But before the official webinar starts, we have a little bit of housekeeping. The webinar is going to last approximately 40 minutes and will be followed by a question and answer session, which is going to last around 20 minutes. It's worth flagging from the start that this webinar is part of a webinar series where we'll be exploring further topics of relevance for electric vehicle infrastructure and adoption. Please use the chat box in your control panel for questions and we will select and read out questions for our speaker at the end of the presentation. Please see the slide for a snapshot of what this looks like. But please also use this opportunity to suggest further topics or aspects that you'd be interested to hear more about in future webinars. The webinar is going to be recorded and the recording will be available online. We will be sending you an email with this link. In terms of the format of the workshop, I'm going to provide a brief reference to some IEA work of relevance before handing over to the Curie team. As you can probably guess, there's a range of work that we do that is relevant to this theme. In terms of the energy efficiency divisions, we've got some recent examples. In 2020, digitalization for energy efficiency, we started a project on digitalization, smart grids and energy efficiency with a focus on how digital technologies can increase the role of demand side response, including electric vehicles in power system resilience. Cooling is a key part of our work across domestic and transport sectors. And last year, we published Cooling on the Move, which looked at the future of air conditioning in vehicles, including in electric vehicles. While our future work on transport roadmaps considers the resilience of systems. The Clean Energy Ministerial's Electric Vehicles Initiative is a multi-government policy forum dedicated to accelerating the introduction and adoption of electric vehicles worldwide. Colleagues in the Energy and Technology Policy Division of the IEA provide the Secretariat for EVI with outputs including the Global Electric Vehicle Outlook. I'm now going to hand over to Marcello, who's going to provide an introduction to Curie and then introduce his colleagues going forward. Marcello.
Thank you very much, Alison. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. And it's my pleasure today to welcome you on behalf of Curie to this webinar on the challenges of the integration in hot climates, which I will be delivering together with my colleagues, Dr. Sertaj Bayan and Dr. Pierre Kubiak. Next, please. Next slide, please. Very good. So before we start, I would like to quickly go through the agenda for today. So first, I'll provide a short introduction to Kiri, and then I will hand over to my colleagues, Sertac and Pierre, who will discuss the technical challenges posed by hot climates for EVs, and particularly EV chargers and storage batteries. Then I will briefly talk about the economics of EVs in hot climates, and we will then open up the floor for questions. Next one, please. Next. Okay, very good. So Kiri is the Qatar Environment and Energy Research Institute. Its vision is to become the reference research, development, innovation institution in the field of energy, water, and the environment in Qatar, and more broadly in regions with similar climates. Kiri has currently around 160 staff, 120 of which are permanent, and in excess of 4,000 square meters of lab space, plus outdoor testing facilities, which are particularly relevant to today's webinar. Kiri is structured around six centers and one program. Next one, please. The Energy Center, in particular, is currently the largest center at Kiri, and it has six live programs and more than 45 research staff. The Energy Management Program is where the EV research is currently housed. Next one, please. So this busy slide is about the Energy Management Program, and in a nutshell, what the program does is it tackles the challenges of integrating renewable and low carbon power generation with energy efficiency and use appliances in the power grid, particularly in the case of Qatar and countries with similar climates. And as you can see from the red box, the EV integration program that my colleague Sertac is going to illustrate very shortly fits within this broader framework. Now I would like to hand over to Sertac. Next one, please.
Thanks, Dr. Marcelo. Welcome, everyone. Let me start with brief information about our EV integration project at Kiri. Next slide, please. Now, the transition towards electric mobility in Qatar needs careful investigation of potential disruptive impacts of large loads introduced by the electric vehicles. The electric power industry in Qatar is very critical as it enables two livelihood sectors, namely the water desalination and indoor AC for the residents' well-being. Therefore, addressing Qatar's specific challenges on when, where, and how to charge a large collection of EVs is very important. To that end, this project aims to achieve three goals, as you can see here. As a first goal, this project aims to design and implement the fast charger technology for hot climate conditions. The second objective of this project is to examine EV handling capacity of Qatar. We will assess the impacts of large-scale EV integration on distribution and generation assets and providing optimal charging strategies. The last objective is will be based on focused on the battery aging. The high ambient temperature combined with fast charging will reduce battery lifetime and threaten the economic viability of electric vehicles. And this objective will quantify the lifetime and cost of electric vehicles batteries in Qatar. Now, I'm going to start with the deep about this objectives. And now I would like to give very brief information about charging technologies. The charging technologies you can see here can be divided into three mainstreams, or can be even broadly classified into three two types: AC charging stations and DC charging systems. AC level 1 chargers are in the first category, and this kind of chargers for residential use, it takes about 17 hours to charge an EV that has a 24 kilowatt hour battery. AC level 2 chargers are in the second category, and these chargers can either be installed in the homes or can be used in the public charging stations. This kind of charger can take around 8 hours to charge the same battery. DC fast chargers are in the third category, and these chargers are meant for public charging stations alone. And they need three-phase AC input from the grid and consume more than 50 kilowatt power. And these chargers can charge an EV in 30 minutes. Next slide, please. Here, a typical DC charging system is shown here. The charger provides DC directly to battery pack bypassing the OBC, onboard charging. You can see here the charger is arranged in stacks to provide high current, since a single stack will not be able to provide high current due to power switch limitations. Here I would like to talk about the structure of the DC fast charger that we are going to develop for the hot climate conditions. Our focus at Kyri is on DC fast charger, and our aim is to develop DC fast charger technology that can operate in hot climate conditions without any degradation. First, we are going to analyze and experimentally verify different topological approaches for fast charging systems to evaluate their advantages and their feasibility. Here you can see on the right side a couple of topologies we are investigating right now. Furthermore, active and passive component in these topologies will be selected and optimized in order to keep MTBF, the mean time between failures, as much as longer. The focus will be on solutions that do not rely on electrolytic capacitors and provide high efficiency to reduce the cooling effort and the reliability of the overall system. In addition to this, to achieve system level reliability, stack level fault tolerance will be combined with active thermal control in our approach. Next slide, please. As I mentioned before, investigation of the impact of EVs in Qatar power system is the second objective of this project. We all see the market reports, and this report showed that penetration of EV has been increasing drastically in the recent past. And of course, this will bring consequences to the power grid, mainly in terms of peak load management and power quality issues, as you can see here in the slides. I'm not going to discuss deeply more about these issues in the power grid. For that reason, it is essential to evaluate potential grid impacts due to EV integration to ensure consistent grid operation. Next slide, please. Dr. Allison. Here, Qatar's profile is given to better understand the impact of EV on the local grid. There is some important. Oops. Next one, yeah. You can see here there is some important information about Qatar. It is the energy capital of the world, the largest LNG supplier. Electricity is generated mainly through from the national gas. On the right-hand side, you can see here system maximum and minimum demand load curve in 2017. The system maximum reached around 8 gigawatt on 14th of August, and the system minimum is 2.6 gigawatt on 25th of February. And it is clear that the consumption in summer almost three times higher than the consumption in winter due to the enormous AC loads. And the daily AC versus non-AC load energy consumption data is presented here on the left-hand side, so you can see. The red dots are here AC consumption, and the blue dots represent the non-AC consumption. As you can see here, especially during the summer, AC load is dominant, and its consumption is around 75 to 80% of the overall consumption. And this on the graph is only from the one unit from the Qatar, and you can see what is the impact of AC on the power grid. To sum up, peak load is a key system parameter here. How much generating capacity will be needed when demand is highest? For this case, you can see it is the maximum demand is around 8 gigawatt. Even though peak loads tend to align with specific seasonal electric systems must be able to deliver the maximum load at all the times. And if we add extra loads, let's say a fleet of electric vehicles may increase peak load if the charging aligns with maximum demand for other users. Next slide, please. Here, I would like to present some interesting results of our colleagues' initial study that was that investigate the potential peak load impact from EV charging in Qatar. And this study compares the maximum potential peak load impact from EV charging based on different penetration levels. A stochastic simulation model is developed to assess the impacts of EV charging on power generation. For EV sales statistic, five scenarios are considered. The first four scenarios are assume new EV registration in the next. Dr. Alison, can you please mute other speakers? I don't know what is the reason this echo. Anyways, for EV sales statistic, five scenarios are considered in the simulation model. The first four scenarios assume new EV registration in the next 5 years will mimic in Norway, Netherlands, France, and China, as you can see in this table. In the last scenario, 10% of vehicles are assumed to be electric vehicles as targeted by the state of Qatar. Here you can also see the vehicle types and charging rates used in the simulation model on the right side. We selected 50% SUVs and 50% sedan cars, and we assumed that the SUVs were charged at night and sedans will be charged, half of the sedans will be starting from 9 a.m. and the other half will start at 3 a.m. And also the charging rate, you can see we use the slow charging and fast charging technologies as well. And you can see on the left-hand side, only the case for Norway is presented here because it is the highest penetration rate. As shown in this figure, high demand occurs at night due to the charging of SUVs and reduced in the morning. And this case is acceptable for the grid operator in Qatar, as the peak system demand occurs in the afternoon during summer months and plenty of capacity is available in winter months, as I present. Just before this slide. In this figure on the right-hand side, the worst case scenario is simulated, and we assume that 10% of the vehicles are EVs, and all vehicles start charging at 2 p.m. on the peak day. And here at on the right-hand side, you can see what blue line is the load curve from the other loads, such as ACs or other appliances. And the green one is the extra load is coming from the 10% of the EV. In this case, and again, this is the worst case scenario and it is extreme. In this case, the aggregate EV load exceeds 8.5 gigawatt generation limit and increase the peak demand by around 20%, and which is not desirable by the grid operator. Now, it is clear that if everyone simultaneously charges their cars in the morning or evening, electricity networks can become stressed, as you can see on the left-hand side, because all cars started at 2 p.m. And for that reason, the timing of charger is critical. At this point, smart charging plays a critical role. Next slide, please. I just want to talk about a little bit about the smart charging concepts. Dr. Alison, next slide, please.
Yes, it seems to not.
Smart charging means adapting the charging cycle of electric vehicles to both the conditions of the power system and the needs of vehicle users. And as you can see here, smart charging comes not in a unique approach, but it can be implemented in different ways, from let's say basic smart approach to more advanced approach, and it can be seen here in this, in the left hand side. Basic approach on the top, and going to the bottom of the chart, the most advanced smart charging approach. I'm not going to discuss all of this approach here. Mainly, there are two smart charging options: unidirectional and bidirectional smart charging. And I would like explaining a little bit more how bidirectional smart charging works. Of course, it is important that the market structure and regulations are in place to enable bidirectional charging, first of all. Here we can see how electric vehicles can be provide ancillary services to the power system. For example, the stored energy in electric vehicle battery can be used for peak shaving, you can see on the right hand side. Or we can store energy in the EV battery, and we can use in case of any grid failure, so we can use energy in the EV as a backup source. Next slide, please.
Sorry, Sir Tash, it seems to get a little bit stuck, so we will try.
And so smart charging, you can see, cuts peak load, reduces curtailment, and allows higher shares of low cost PV electricity as well. Yeah. Here also, I would like to talk about how EVs can help PV integration. And we can count EVs as the battery bank of the future, and electric vehicles along with smart charging can help for the integration of renewables. Let me try to explain this concept on this famous curve, namely duck curve. In this curve, there are at least four challenging situations illustrated by parts of the duck curve you can see here. However, here I just want to talk about the belly of the duck. At the belly of the duck, the strong midday sun generates large amounts of solar power, and this coupled with a limited ability to turn off other large generators preparing for afternoon peaks could create a midday surplus of power. A promising approach during these times would be to further increase electric load or to better match solar availability. And storing electricity for later use can help significantly on all these fronts. For instance, batteries can be charged in the middle of the day to fill the belly of the duck and to avoid overgeneration. Furthermore, at other times of the day, the batteries can provide power to satisfy the loads. As I just presented, we can use this power for the peak shaving or even the grid support in case of any failure in there. Next, please. It is clear that energy storage systems help for the integration of the renewables. So why don't we use electric vehicles as an energy storage unit? As you can see here, currently we have around 6 million EV cars on the road, and the expectation is around 150 million in 2030, according to the Paris Agreement Alliance scenario. To achieve this, vehicle-to-grid technology plays an important role. In other words, the smart charging plays an important role. Of course, again, it is important that the regulations are placed to enable bidirectional charging. Next slide, please. In the next slide, let me present our initial study that shows how we can use vehicle-to-grid concept in Qatar. Yeah, here you can see the block diagram of the system. We have PV. In the study, we present a grid-tied PV system with an integrated EV battery and its power flow control strategy. Our aim in this study is to coordinate EV battery and PV power to improve the power system performance. Please note that this is just initial study and only one EV connected to charging point. And here In this graph, you can see the solar irradiation data from the Qatar and the load profile as well. Next, please. Now we will show you three cases. Next, please.
Yes.
It's stacked again, I think.
Yeah, it seems to be a little bit strange. It seems to get a bit stuck. I'll carry on pressing down because it seems to. Yeah.
Yeah. In case one shows the simulation results when there is no load in the system. At this time, we don't have any EV connected to a charging point, and we don't have any load in the system. And the system injects the generated PV power to the main grid in this mode of operation. So such configuration may create surplus power, especially at noon, as I just mentioned before. Next, please. Yeah, case two shows the simulation results when AC load and EV battery connect to the systems. The initial load connect to the system was 50 kilowatts, and the initial state of the charge of the EV battery was 75% for the simulation state. And you can see it is clear that the utility grid is used as the primary power source when there is no PV generation due to the zero solar irradiation. Dr. Ellison, can you mute others because and can you go back to case two because this is case and here it's clear that the utility grid is providing power for the load. On the other hand, PV power is used as the primary power source, and the load demand from the main grid is decreases when solar power is available. Furthermore, you can see here the control system starts to charge the battery when there is excess power in the system. You can see we are charging the battery only when there is excess power from the PV. So we are not requesting any power from the utility grids to charge the battery. Next, please. The simulation results of case three are shown here. In this operation mode, the EV battery operates in discharge mode and supports the main grid. The initial load connected to the system is 100 kilowatt, and the initial state of the charge was 75%. And also the minimal allowable EV battery, the reserved state of the charge value is set to 70%. As you can see here, from 75 to 70% of the state of the charge, the EV supports the grid and it injects power to the grid. As I told you, this is just the initial results, and we have a lot to do in order to achieve all project goals. And this was the last slide from my side. Now Dr. Pierre Kubiak is going to present the battery related parts of the project. Dr. Pierre, the stage is yours.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Sertak, and good morning, everyone. So my part of this webinar will be about the technical challenge faced by storage battery in hot climates. So I will start my talk with an introduction about batteries. Next slide, please. So batteries, lithium-ion batteries have been developed now for more than 25 years, and tremendous progress has been done in terms of power density, energy density, cost, lifetime, and safety, and to make electric vehicles now viable and affordable for the public. So, but there are still challenges because of hot climate. It's known that high temperature is very detrimental to battery safety and can reduce also significantly the battery lifetime. So if we want to introduce electric vehicles into hot climate countries, we need still to achieve higher performance, especially in terms of safety and lifetime. Generally, this is achieved by developing better battery components, which takes time, or if we want to have a shorter view, try to optimize the battery usage and the battery protection. So, next slide, please. Is this stuck again?
I think if I mute myself, it seems to get stuck. So I think that's the kind of challenge that I think it feels a bit slow to warm up if I've been on mute. So I think this has been the kind of a bit of a work in a
second. Okay. At some point.
Yeah. Creating a level of expectation.
Yeah, just a small word about cost now that you can see about this publication from Bloomberg last year. So, lithium-ion batteries now have reached below $200 per kilowatt hour, which is kind of good for the technology. So, let's go to the plan in Qatar. So, producing electric vehicles in Qatar requires installation of infrastructure such as charging stations equipped with solar panels. We want to take advantage of the high solar irradiance. So this is PV is very
muted
for that. So the energy generated by the solar panels can be or directly feeding the cars or excess stored in energy storage system. So yeah, in our studies, we have to investigate both kind of batteries. Of course, the batteries for electric vehicles, but also the batteries used for stationary for charging station. But let's start with the batteries of electric vehicles. In the next slide, please. Yeah. It's known that battery aging and battery behavior depend strongly on the cycling and storage conditions. So cycling for electric vehicles means the driving conditions. If we take the case of Qatar, driving conditions are characterized by short distances, congested traffic, as you can see in these pictures, which leads to frequent stop. And here you have typically a discharge driving pattern. When you see charge, discharge due to stop and go and regenerative braking. But also, we have the influence of high external temperature. So, even if short distances may generally will mean less battery usage, high temperature will mean more usage from the cooling system, but also more usage from the air conditioning. That means more battery drainage. This is under investigation now. We are recording data from the driving patterns in Qatar. And so we hope to have more data soon. So now in the next slide, I will speak about parking. Parking conditions. So generally, parkings are directly under temperature conditions. So we see here in Qatar the evolution through year of both minimal and maximal temperature, and we can see that from April to almost end of October, temperature is above 30 degrees, maximum temperature is 30 degrees, and during the June, July, August, we have a maximum higher than 40 degrees. This is quite bad for batteries, since generally the optimal temperature for battery storage is about 25 degrees. And once it's above this temperature, the battery lifetime is kind of strongly affected. So what we have to do to prevent accelerated aging is to have more efficient cooling system that will drain the battery, of course, during storage, but has to maintain the battery in good conditions. Another parameters to take into account is the safety, and mostly This concerns two or three wheels vehicles, which will not be able to have a cooling system, so will be constantly exposed to air. So in that case, we will have to choose cheaper batteries because they will fade very much faster than car batteries, for example, but also more safer batteries. And what we do in our lab is testing different kind of batteries and see their response in terms of heat generation at different state of charge. Last point about parking. We have also to be aware that high state of charge and low state of charge, higher than 80% state of charge and low is below 10% state of charge, are also very detrimental to battery safety. So we will have also to have intelligent, smart battery management to keep the battery under safe conditions. So in the next slide, I present the facilities that we are lucky to have in Kerry, which is outdoor test facilities, where we have, you see in the pictures, a PV field of about 200 kilowatts connected to a battery storage, lithium ion technology of 250 kilowatt maximum and 500 kilowatt hour energy capacity, sorry. And this is connected to a load, which is a huge building, which is itself connected to the grid. This arrangement can be taken as a model for charging station, even if the dimensions do not correspond. We can see the different parameters of external condition made of PV and battery. About the battery, here is the topology. So we have two parts of the battery. One that contains the cells, lithium ion cells themselves. This part is under air conditioning, maintained between 20-25 degrees constantly. And the other part is a power control system, which is just under fan air circulation. So to maintain the air conditioning and the temperature stable, this requires 5 to 10 kilowatts, depending also on the outside temperature. The higher the temperature outside, the more energy you need to maintain the ambient temperature. Some battery characteristics, this is a commercial battery from BYD, made of lithium iron phosphate and graphite. And you see, so let's see the next slide. So why we have to investigate PV, especially in desert conditions? PV is very sensitive to soiling. I mean, so soiling is the deposition of dust step by step on top of the panels. So on top you can see clean panels. On the bottom, you see panels after several days, weeks of non-cleaning, and also after a dust storm. You see that they are completely covered by dust. Here in the middle, we have the evolution of the energy generated by the PV field. And you see this effect of soiling. So at the beginning of the month, you can see that it's more or less clean. And you see more step by step, the energy delivered is less and less. And if we calculate, considering that we need a constant energy from the battery every day, so we can calculate simply that we need to equilibrate between the first part and the second part of the month, we need a battery of more than 650 kilowatt hour, which is even more than what we have. So what we can see from that is that 1 month cleaning frequency is not is too long. Basically, the battery will be overwhelmed. We cannot do that. So, and the last graph that I want to show. This is just a simulation with the cleaning frequency from 1 week to 3 weeks. So, and the calculation that we made is that if we maintain 1 week of frequency for cleaning, we need to oversize the battery only by 2%. If we clean every 3 weeks, we need now to oversize the battery 20%. So this also, if not affecting directly battery performance, it affects still the battery by doing oversizing, which will also affect the cost. So one of the solution is, of course, to adapt the frequency of cleaning to have the best usage of the batteries. And in my last slide, I report the effect of dust and temperature directly on the battery. So on the left part of the slide, you see the filters, clean and dirty filters that you have. Dust is coming constantly inside, and you see that in another electronic part that is also affected by dust. So we need to maintain the battery quite clean every month. There is a maintenance service, but even so, even we have irreversible damage to the battery, and this is shown in the noise, electronic noise that you can see below, that even at rest, we can see residual current, which don't really exist. It's just due to electrostaticity, due to the dust. And you see that this mess up with the state of charge determination of the battery. And so we have problems with battery management units and battery management systems, and also intermittent battery interruption due to the dust. And last part is about the temperature itself. So I mentioned that the cells are under air conditioning, and here in the blue part we have the AC on, and we see two curves. The blue one in below is the temperature of the cells themselves, and the black one is the temperature recorded at the PCS. So you see that the control system, as it's not under air conditioning, it has a lot of fluctuation. This is day after day, you have the temperature of the day, and when you charge, it goes higher up to 50 degrees when the cells are still under 25 degrees. When we stop the AC and still charge at 100 kilowatts, we see increase of temperature of cells up to 30 degrees and then stay stable, while the PCS goes up to 55 degrees. What does that mean? That basically, maybe high temperature will not affect so much the cells themselves, but for sure, if we don't control the control system electronic part, this will lead to rapid fatigue of the electronic components. So for this, and I will finish my part like that, the main conclusion is that we need a high level of maintenance if we want to introduce infrastructure for electric vehicles. And now I will hand over to my colleague, Dr. Marcello.
Unmuted.
Hi, Marcello, if you'd like to come in.
Hello? Alison, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, fine. Sorry, I was not properly unmuted. So I was, I just want to conclude this webinar by very quickly discussing some key points about how hot climates affect the economics and the uptake of electric vehicles. I'm very conscious of time. We are running substantially late, so I'm going to have to keep this a bit shorter than planned. Next slide, please. while the slide transitions. I will not waste the time, and I wanted to effectively put this into context. So Qatar has launched a green car initiative, rolling out charging infrastructure and EVs. And in the context of that, at Qiri, we are studying the cost and benefits and policy options of electric vehicles. This is, you know, the context in which we are looking at. It's the previous one. Okay, very good. So this is the context in which we are looking at the economics of EVs. And we have a forthcoming white paper. And I just reported here some key messages from it. First of all, EVs can be beneficial to Qatar, but the costs and the market barriers, and this in part depends on the hot climate, but not only, are different from those of the leading markets. So the policy approach needs to be tailored. And for these reasons and other reasons, it's very difficult to replicate the rapid uptake that we've seen in places like Norway and China. And the government is quite rightly starting from public fleets. That makes sense for a number of reasons. And passenger cars, however, will require a detailed study of the market and will also require considering all possible options in terms of market segments and technologies, not only pure battery electric vehicles, but also plug-in hybrids and maybe later on even fuel cell electric vehicles. I'm going to talk about very briefly about the economics of both buses and cars, but let's move to the next slide, please. Before I do that, I just want to just very quickly go back to the reason why hot climates affect electric vehicle range. We have, that's been brought up already by Pierre before. And there's two reasons mainly. First, the need for air conditioning inside the vehicle. So on the top right of this slide, you can see simulations of a SUV being driven to work and back, and without going into much detail, it's worth saying a vehicle parked under the sun the whole day, when driven back, will consume far more energy from the battery for AC than for propulsion. So the consumption is very substantial. The other reason for reducing range is the need for battery thermal management system. And if it's an active liquid cooled system, which keeps the temperature of the battery within an optimal range, that can consume around 10% of the total energy consumed by the vehicle when moving. So that's, again, substantial. I've reported data from simulations. We know better the impact of cold climates on EV range from real use data. Because some of the leading countries in terms of adoption, Norway and Iceland, are cold countries. We still don't have the same amount of data for hot climates, but it is quite clear from simulations and also from the study by the IEA cooling on the move that was previously mentioned by Alison, that that's a very real problem. Next slide, please. Now, very briefly on buses, the economics of urban buses, like any other fleet, depot-based fleet vehicle, are quite straightforward, and you can estimate the total cost of ownership, and you can work out whether the vehicle is saving you money or it's costing you money relative to a conventional diesel vehicle, and that will very much depend on the route that you're considering and on the difference between the price of diesel and electricity. I will not go into the details of this. They're quite well known, but it's worth mentioning that if you're looking to deploy electric buses in a very hot climate, then the power consumption from the AC will require oversizing the battery. If the vehicle is only charged at night, then with the battery, you have to drive all day and you have to also power the AC the whole day. And I've made some simple calculations here, which are not necessarily corresponding to the case of Qatar. And it's actually a very, if you like, it's a best case scenario here, where we assume that the AC consumption is around 10 kilowatt and the bus is operated for only 10 hours a day. that would mean having to add some 100 kilowatt hour more battery capacity, which is quite substantial. For small buses, from small urban buses, you might be looking at 300 kilowatt hour battery for propulsion. So this means 25% more. And with at a cost of $200 per kilowatt hour, that means adding at least $20,000 per bus. So this has a role in the economics of the bus, and you also have to consider that this battery capacity is used in the hot climate, in the hot months, but it's not used in the cold months. So it's effectively lowering the utilization of the battery on the bus. On top of that, 100 kilowatt hour battery capacity is going to add between 500 and kilograms and 1 ton to the bus. So it reduces the payload, it reduces the number of passengers that can be carried on the bus, and will require higher power for charging overnight. That all adds to the cost or detracts from the revenues. Next one, please. Next one and last is about passenger cars. And here, the impact of hot climate on adoption is more complicated, because the decision to adopt an EV by a private car user is a complex one. It's not purely based on TCO, total cost of ownership, but definitely the range is one consideration, and the perceived durability and reliability of the vehicle is very important too. So I will not go into the detail of what exactly range means for a passenger car user. It's quite complex, but if we look on the top right, we'll see some data that is based on GPS measurement of actual driving behavior today of internal combustion engine vehicles, which tells us the extent to which range is really needed. And it also gives us a sense of how a short range around 150 kilometer, which you'd be facing if you are driving a longer range car in a hot climate with AC, allows these cars to be driven as they are driven today without any adaptation. So you can see it depends on the country. Big countries where vehicles are driven over typically longer distances, you can see only 20% of vehicles in Sweden could cope with 150 kilometer range. A lot more vehicles could cope with that in like small cities like Winnipeg in Canada. This means that different segments of the EV market will be more or less suited to being adopted in hot climates. If you think the high-end battery electric vehicles, the Teslas with very long range and liquid cooling of the battery pack, they can handle the hot weather well. Again, on the low right side of the slide, you can see how temperature of the battery pack changes with different types of cooling systems. And it shows how no cooling or passive cooling actually leads to battery overheating, which reduces the lifetime. This is not a problem for the high-end vehicles if you keep them plugged in or you keep the cooling going even when the vehicle is parked. But if you look at the low-end BEVs, those are vehicles that have small batteries, range is short already, it gets shortened by AC, and the lifetime will be reduced by the hot climate. So this is it. I would like to conclude, next slide please, by a quick recap on the key messages that we put through this presentation. Number one is about EV chargers. In extreme hot climate, particularly the rapid chargers, need to be designed for high efficiency, which will reduce the need for cooling and will improve their reliability. Smart charging is important, generally speaking, for EVs, but in extreme hot climates, where you have substantial cooling load from AC and where you are introducing large amounts of PV, takes a whole different dimension, and it's important to be looked at specifically for this kind of climates, and policy that is conducive to that is needed as well. Stationary batteries, they are sensitive to dust, as we have seen, and they are sensitive to dust directly because of the impact that dust has on the PV that we use to charge them, and indirectly because it affects it's the maintenance need. And finally, in extreme hot climates, the range and durability of electric vehicles are affected substantially, and that can hinder their adoption and needs to be taken into consideration through R&D and policy. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening, and I would like to open up the floor for questions.
Thank you, Marcello, and thank you, Per and Sir Tash. That was absolutely a fascinating session, series of sessions, and I think that's reflected in the richness of the questions we've been asked to feed back to you. Thank you, Vida, for coordinating those questions. I'll start with one, I think, for Sir Tash, which is looking around a bi-directional system would require a larger battery size in the vehicle itself. Wouldn't this negatively affect the efficiency of the vehicle as the EV is heavier due to the larger battery? If you'd like to come in.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Allison. That's actually a very good question. Actually, when we are talking about the bidirectional charging, we are not talking about only one electric vehicle, and one electric vehicle can be used in the vehicle to home configuration, and it can help a single household. I mean, it can manage the self-consumption in the house. But when many batteries are connected to a public grid to aggregate it, that actually help to entire system or the distribution system operator manage better the grid. And I don't think so it will be a problem in terms of the efficiency of the system, because we are going to use the same size of the battery. It is very important for being able to aggregate all these small batteries and sell the services in a competitive wholesale market. I would like to mention that this is important because the capacity of these batteries, of course, it is very small. In order to participate in the wholesale market, we need at least maybe 1 megawatt or 2 megawatts to be traded in the market. So this would mean that we will need around 500 electric vehicles to be aggregated in order to be able to compete in the market and offer services. For example, there are two projects in Denmark and also in the UK, and they have a lot of owners of electric vehicles to earn money by sending power to the grid through bidirectional chargers. Of course, maybe it is very important the market structure and the regulations are in place, must be in place to enable vehicle-to-grid charging structure. I hope this is the answer of the question.
Thank you. That was great. Pierre, Marcello, would you like to come in? Anything to add? If not, I'll move on to the next question.
Let's move on to the next question.
Yeah. Apart from the temperature, what is the plan to manage the high temperature of Qatar and higher SOC? For example, real customer cases, the car owner wanted their batteries to be charged most of the time. Marcello, is that one for you?
Yes. Okay. I mean, this is a very interesting question. And I think the more interesting thing is that there is really no simple answer to this. We need to take into consideration what consumers want in terms of obviously state of charge and availability of the vehicle. We need to take into consideration what vehicle the vehicles want, what kind of range, and then we can choose technologies and we can develop policies that take all this into consideration. So for me, this is not really a technical question. This is a question in terms of setting the right expectations for what can be achieved in terms of electric vehicle deployment and what types of vehicles should be rolled out.
Okay, thank you. I think Pierre now, about what is the reliability of charging an EV on solar PV based on electricity when grid power is not available. Pierre, is that one for you?
Maybe more for Sir Tash, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can answer this one. As Dr. Pierre already presented in Qatar, we have PV with stationary storage in order to charge the EV. Of course, the PV will not be enough to provide energy 24 hours to charge the battery. In this case, we need to attach some stationary battery to system, what we have in Qatar right now. So the answer could be yes, PV will not enough to to charge the EV when the grid is not there. But if we include or attach the stationary battery in the charging station, which have right now in Qatar, it could help.
Okay. Thank you.
Alison, if I may, sorry, I would like to go back to the question you asked, because I think on reflection, I missed one important point. So apart from obviously choosing the right vehicles and policies and so on, there is a particular question around hot climates. When you keep a vehicle parked, and the vehicle is parked for most of the time, and if you allow the temperature of the battery pack to go up and you keep a high state of charge, then degradation would be very fast. So assuming that a high state of charge is needed, and you can obviously reduce that a bit, setting up the battery control system in the right way, you still need to cool down the pack. If you are plugged in, that can be done if you have a active cooling system. But if you're not plugged in, then you need to allow for the vehicle to run the battery cooling system itself while the vehicle is not running. And that will drain the battery, and that will reduce the range that the vehicle user finds when picking up the car at the end of the day. So all these things, I think, are not visible yet. They're not necessarily on the radar screen of the users and of the policymakers, and that also needs to be taken into consideration.
Okay, thank you very much, Marcello. I think I have one here for Serkas, which is, what is the efficiency you might expect with your design, and could you please let us know about the technology planning in the fast charger?
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Alison. We have not built one, but we simulated just active front-end rectified part of the charger, and we got in the 90 above. It was around 98% of percent for the active front-end with silicon carbide technology. We are still working on it to increase the efficiency. And let me also talk a little bit about the concept we are going to employ in our fast charger. For the capacitors, that are the key passive components of power conversion. We are planning to use the film capacitors, and film capacitors have excellent high frequency and temperature characteristic as well. Of course, this capacitors are typically larger and more expensive than ceramic capacitor or other kind of capacitor with the same capacity. On the other hand, when we are designing such systems in hot climate conditions, the passive components, I mean the capacitors, should withstand very high temperatures and offer excellent stability as well. In addition to this, we are planning to design the converter topology that has a fault tolerant capability as well. So stack level fault tolerance will be combined with active thermal control in order to achieve the system level reliability. Last but not least, also as active switches, we are going to use high band gap semiconductor devices. Most probably we are going to use silicon carbide technology because it is more popular in the market nowadays. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Marcello, I think I have one for you, which is, and it's a thank you for the content, but is there any research being done in improving the HVAC systems? Maybe it would be more cost effective to reduce consumption rather than increase battery capacity. So is there anything around going forward about the efficiency of the air conditioning aspects?
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much, Alison. Yes, I'm aware of quite a lot of research going on this particular subject. It has been on the radar screen for some time, and it pertains to conventional vehicles as well as electric vehicles. There are differences because in a conventional vehicle, the AC is driven by the main engine and can be a mechanical system. It can also be an electrical heat pump, but on electric vehicles, it needs to be an electrical heat pump. And certainly there is scope for improving the efficiency of that. There is also scope for improving the thermal insulation of the vehicle through glazing and other systems. Definitely a very important area.
Okay, brilliant, thank you. And I think one maybe for you all from a different perspectives, James, I'm thanking you for a great session. The EU has observed that the promised battery life from OEMs is not matching with the actual vehicle battery life. Is this a worry? Can this be improved?
Yeah, are you okay? I can get started and maybe. Yeah,
good. I think it comes from various different angles.
Please, go ahead.
So it's again, you know, this I mean, the OEMs, the major OEMs would be very, very careful about all this, and I don't want to comment on their particular strategies when it comes to deploying vehicles in hot climates. However, it is quite clear that, as Pierre said, there are two areas you can work on. One is the management of the battery from an electrical point of view, and from a thermal point of view, when you have to do both, that is essential. And the other one is on the battery chemistry itself, because we know there are different chemistries and some can withstand higher temperatures better than others. There are always trade-offs when it comes to battery chemistries. And today we know that the major OEMs are all converging towards the same family of chemistries, at least for the next few years. We'll live with that. And those are not chemistries that can necessarily cope with very high temperatures particularly well. If we look at different vehicles, now I'm going to open like a very small parenthesis on 2 and 3 wheelers, because those are particularly relevant to India. It is possible to use different chemistries there that are they have lower energy density, but they can withstand higher temperatures better. Pierre, I hope I have not said anything incorrect, and if you want to have any, Please go ahead.
No, everything is correct about the chemistry. I mean, research is still going on. So I think what is available now in the car nowadays in Europe and US is a technology that has been developed 5 to 10 years ago. Now we are aware about more efficient materials. We are aware also about more efficient design and additives that prolongate the life of the battery. But definitely, it takes time to time and money to introduce new components to batteries. And also, so I go to the field of Marcello. So the one of the big problem also is the price or the cost of lithium ion. So now dropping cost is much more favorable than for example, five years ago. This is, I remember in 2012, for example, there was a lot of discussion of is electric vehicles really affordable. Now we are past this discussion and we go more and more. And last not the least, people in battery field now are speaking more and more about circular economy, recycling batteries, reusing the components and so on, that will make the cost more dropping. So this is my part of the question. Something else to add?
I think we probably exhausted this question. I don't know if we have time to take more questions.
I think we're going to start wrapping up, but thank you again for your excellent participation and for the audience's patience in us being unable to answer all the questions. And I'd like to flag up that the recording will be available online, and we are looking to do more further webinars in this space. As in the beginning, we will let you know when the link to the recording is online, and then if you want to follow up with query panelists, I'll encourage you to do that as well. Okay, thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.